Welcome to the latest episode of the IIF Global Regulatory Update Podcast. I'm Martin Boer, Senior Director of Regulatory Affairs at the Institute of International Finance in Washington, D.C. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by McKinsey Senior Financial Leaders Justin Grice, Lamont Atkins, Soumya Banerjee, and Lauren Craig to discuss our joint IIF McKinsey 2024 report on future-proofing cybersecurity and emerging technology entitled "The Cyber Clock is Ticking, De-Risking Emerging Technologies in Financial Services." Justin Grice is a partner in the McKinsey Chicago office. He leads McKinsey's cybersecurity work in North America within the risk and resilience practice. Lamont Atkins joins us from Dallas, where he's a senior advisor at McKinsey & Co. Soumya Banerjee is an associate partner, and Lauren Craig is an engagement manager and cybersecurity expert, both based in the New York office. Welcome so much to our podcast, Justin, Lamont, Soumya, and Lauren. It's great having you on here to discuss our joint report, which we've been working on a long time together and which explores how financial services firms around the world are currently future-proofing themselves to keep pace with a rapidly evolving technology landscape that presents growing cyber risks. In doing so, firms must consider not only what the benefits are from new emerging technologies, but also what risks that they potentially introduce. So without further ado, why don't we jump in, Justin? Cybersecurity has obviously been around a long time, and financial institutions have also been at the forefront of adopting new technologies. But what is so different now, and why did you want to embark on this project with us?
Yeah, Martin. And first off, just a huge thank you to you and to the IIF for embarking on this project together. It was a big undertaking, but we thought it was an important one to take and to look into together. You know, maybe just to set the context as to why we wanted to do this. One, threats have continued to rise and the threat landscape has changed, and it changes every day. Threat actors have become more sophisticated. They continue to be more sophisticated every day. And companies and CISOs know this. They struggle to keep up and keep pace with the sophisticated threat actors and the new novel attacks. Simultaneously, we've seen regulations increase. We've seen boards become more accountable for what the management and CISOs are doing. And legal action has been taken against CISOs and management. And this is all happening within the past year. At the same time, the pace of technology, it continues to change and accelerate beyond even what we thought. In fact, as we started this study, we came up with a list of transformative and emerging technologies, and that list changed as we went through this study together. The pace of Gen AI and the functionality and the new use cases changed as we went through this study. But financial services companies are unique. As we do cyber engagements and help companies in the financial services sector, they are always at the forefront and the leading edge and score the highest in terms of their cyber maturity. And it's partly because they're at the highest end of the risk profile. We wanted to learn from that. And we wanted to share that learning, not only with their peers and with everybody within the IIF community and broadly in financial services, but we wanted to share that outside of financial services and see what we could learn. Fundamentally, we set out to answer the question, what can companies and organizations do today that would ready them for the risks of tomorrow? And of course, you know, the banks can learn from each other, but we wanted to shine a spotlight on the industry and the investment profiles that they are making within cybersecurity and reveal steps that we could take as cyber organizations today to ready them for the risks of tomorrow. And I got to tell you, the results are interesting, and that's what we'll explore over the course of our time together.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Justin. Lamont, you also bring a lot of experience on the government and defense side. So I was wondering, how do you view the current cyber risk landscape? And as we look at our survey results, are the risks increasing? Are they becoming more sophisticated, also given the geopolitical climate recently? And how is the financial sector in particular currently being impacted?
Hey, thanks for that question, Martin. And thanks also for the opportunity to join you today. It's been great working with you and the team at IIF. So prior to joining McKinsey, I spent 24 years in the Air Force, all within the cyber community. I'm seeing the same problems in the financial sector from a risk perspective that we saw across the Department of Defense. Cyber risks are definitely increasing in both frequency and severity. And as Justin mentioned, it's also evolving from a sophistication standpoint. Some of this is fueled by current geopolitical tensions combined with recent tech advancements. Specifically, state-sponsored actors are leveraging cyberspace as a battleground for espionage, disruption, and even influence. We just saw a congressional hearing where the FBI, U.S. Cyber Command, and CISA leadership talked candidly about the persistent threat that we're seeing to our critical infrastructure, including the financial sector. Cybersecurity continues to be a national security risk. In addition to the state-sponsored threat, specific to the financial services firms in particular, we also face increasingly well-funded, highly organized, and well-trained criminals in the cyberspace. They are also adopting emerging tech to aid their attacks. This widespread increase in cyber risk was a big motivation for us to do our recent survey. Given that we know that cyber risks are increasing, how are firms managing their existing risk at the same time that they're expanding their tech footprint? Are they protecting themselves or just opening themselves up to new risk with the adoption of new tech? We feel that our survey results and the work that we've done with you and your team will help start a conversation to answer those questions.
Hearing about the increased cyber landscape, it's good to see also that there's a lot of benefits when it comes to emerging technology. So I wanted to ask Soumya, maybe you can tell us a bit more about which technologies you think, given our joint work here, have the most promise in helping future-proof firms from cybersecurity risk.
Thank you, Martin, for the opportunity here and the partnership. It was a pleasure working with you and the team. And going back to the question, I think emerging technologies have already proven and are showing that it can strengthen the business, increase in a various different levers, including automation, scalability, cost savings. And the interesting part is, as these emerging technologies think about applied AI, specifically in the talk of the town these days, these are also giving almost a lever or a weapon or a tool for the CISOs and the cybersecurity teams on how to think about a different paradigm of protection and detection and response in cybersecurity. So for example, AI and ML in cybersecurity traditionally been used in threat detection and XDR capabilities in fraud detection, pretty much looking into analyzing vast amount of data in real time and finding the needle in the haystack. The thing that the CISOs always wake up is like, how do I make sure that that needle, that malware that is there, potentially could be there in my environment, I can identify it, right? But interestingly, there are some emerging applied AI areas that are coming up as well. If you think about, you know, application of Gen AI, one of the use case there is about, you know, how do I think about the natural language, about conversations and behavior? And if you think about cybersecurity gaps, one of the issues with cybersecurity threat is human behavior. How are people in the organization behaving? You know, how are they interacting? And are they opening any threat vectors during that behavior? Whether it's insider threat, whether it's clicking on an email, whether it's, you know, inadvertently exfiltrating a data, etc. So I think if I look at Gen AI and other applications in cybersecurity, it gives a tremendous opportunity for organizations to use these tools to think about how do they look into the behavior in the organization and use these tools to enable an additional layer of protection. In addition, you can have, you know, the other emerging capability areas such as automation, further application of cloud and, you know, SaaS-based architecture in cybersecurity. Those are helping financial institutions to enable the scale that they need for cybersecurity, as well as optimize on the cost.
So lots of positive use cases there. That's great. If we looked at, on the flip side, Lauren, these new technologies, including generative AI and machine learning, of course, also pose substantial new risks, right? So when you're looking at the results, which of these risks came out as most important to you? And what are firms really concerned about these technologies?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something we can't discount, right? Like there's a ton of benefits, but the risks are definitely there as well, both in existing risks that they may have, as well as introducing new risks and cyber risks that they're not necessarily equipped to prepare for. So when we look at the top technologies that firms are investing in, our results show that four top technologies really came out that they were most applicable for. And it's hard to pick just one as the highest risk because they all four introduce new risks. So when we looked at those top four ones, so number one, cloud and edge computing, two, applied AI, three, next generation software development, and four, trust architecture, they each four had over 70% respondents saying that these were widely applicable to their organizations. And they're each four bringing in new risks and exacerbating existing ones. So for example, when you look at cloud and edge computing, which 84% of our respondents said this was a key focus for them, you know, as they're continuing in their cloud transformation journey and their network boundaries are continuing to disappear, they're increasing their risks of exposure to threat actors and nation states. You know, when we look at applied AI, which over 80% of respondents said that was a key focus for them, it's bringing significant regulatory risks as AI requirements are developing, as well as vulnerability risks due to the potential for insecure code development, data leakage, and plausibility risks as they're implementing this. You know, and when we look at the other two, next generation software development, which over 75% was a key focus, and then digital identity and trust architecture, which 70% says was a key focus, you know, they're together increasing risks of data loss, reputational harm, insider threats, you know, both through misconfigured implementations, as well as the fact that there's a lot of heavy upfront costs to really properly implement these due to time, resourcing, and skill sets. And those often aren't necessarily done perfectly, so they're introducing additional risks. So really, you know, it's hard to say what's the top risk because all of these technologies bring it, you know, and as Sonia said, they're also bringing benefits, but it's hard to discount that. And separately, we did want to see what risks were top of mind for organizations and if they really were the right ones as we're looking at the technologies. So we also surveyed them to just flat out ask, what risks are top of mind for you? And as we know, risk management is nothing new to financial firms. It was interesting to kind of see, you know, was it maybe the right risk that they're focusing on? And when they did say the results, and they weren't super surprising, but they weren't necessarily directly correlated. You know, they said they were worried about cyber attacks, worried about the artificial intelligence risks, talent management, which has continued to be an issue within cybersecurity, as well as third-party and supply chain management and data security. These are all things that are incredibly relevant now and will continue to persist both with existing and new technologies.
Great overview. Why don't we unpack those four technologies then? So Justin, why don't we start with cloud and edge computing, which Lauren said came out, you know, as the number one technology mentioned. What benefits do you see from cloud and edge computing for both large global, but also for smaller firms? And how are you advising your clients about how to look at these risks?
Yeah, it's a great question, Martin. And if I were to maybe sum it up in one word, it's agility. You know, the agility that cloud gives companies is hard to quantify because the benefits touch so many aspects of the business, whether that be the ability to spin up new products, enter new markets, experiment, try new things, look at new data in new ways, and sort of shortcut a development cycle that quite frankly used to be tied to procurement of infrastructure that would take forever. These are all incredible benefits that now have just come to the fore. But you know, with those benefits, when not done with a process-minded, security-first mindset, it can introduce a vast number of risks. And so, you know, cloud and edge computing do offer those sorts of benefits, like flexibility, scalability. And you know, one thing I didn't mention is the cost efficiencies. You know, cloud, when it first was introduced, brought this promise of incredible cost efficiency or cost savings. And while it is true that it can, oftentimes, and especially in our financial services clients, it's not necessarily the cost savings that we are looking at. It's the ability to control costs. It's the FinOps that we talk about and the ability to get that granular level control versus making that fixed cost investment and paying for it, whether or not you're using it. And so these cost efficiencies, you know, rise to the top as a huge benefit. You know, however, moving these workloads to the cloud and having these boundaries disappear is a huge issue. You know, we've seen instances where companies, in an effort to move fast, in an effort to experiment, in an effort to try new things, have put new functionality on the cloud without the right controls and have accidentally disclosed massive amounts of information, right? Is this a cloud issue? Arguably not, right? This is a process issue. This is a controls issue. If you're bad at security, I say bad in quotes, if you're, you can't hear me through the podcast, but if you're bad at security, you're bad process minded, internally, you're going to be exceptionally bad at it in the cloud because you're going to automate your dysfunction. Now, if you can automate these things, if you can build security in natively into the cloud, if you can build it into the code, and you can build it in by design, which really is that opportunity when you move to the cloud, then you don't think about it. It comes out of the box. And that is the opportunity that cloud represents. So scalability, agility, cost control, better security by design all represent these incredible opportunities that if done right, are the value proposition that cloud and edge computing brings.
So Justin, you're right. There's just lots of opportunities there. And when we first started talking about what technologies we wanted to consider for this report, we looked at things like the metaverse and headgear and, of course, cloud and edge computing. But just over the last 6 months or so, there's been a really big increase in Gen AI, applied AI. So, Lamont, I wanted to ask you, since it's still so new, how relevant is a Gen AI to the business of firms? And how do you see the adoption going forward? And how could that disrupt the financial services industry?
Yeah, Martin, I think it's absolutely relevant. And it's an exciting, albeit risky, area of growth. As applied AI technologies continue to evolve, they offer increasing value to firms, and Gen AI promises disruption of the financial industry. Gen AI has slowly become a lot more than just a media buzzword. We're seeing firms across the financial industry and other industries use it to drive growth in an impactful way. There are multiple use cases deployed by firms such as financial crime modeling, financial risk modeling, and asset modeling as well, but Gen AI and large language models also offer more use cases and potential, such as exploring customer interaction support, personalized marketing, and even fraud detection. It's exciting to see the potential this offers firms to gain a competitive advantage in the applied AI space before the tech is ready to be widely deployed. For instance, firms can implement proper oversight and responsible guardrails and controls for AI technology, thereby really hastening its adoption when it has sufficiently matured. Of course, it brings with it incredible risk, and that's not something to discount.
And I'll just chime in on what, you know, what Lamont mentioned, because I think it's 100% correct. I think we should tie in the cloud theme to generative AI. Generative AI all runs on the cloud, right? It's the underpinning. Without cloud, generative AI couldn't possibly exist. And we could make the argument that it could run an on-prem technology, but I don't think that that's a very valid and fair argument. So you secure the cloud, you secure the underlying infrastructure on which Gen AI runs. Now, there are unique risks that we see that threat actors are exploiting for Gen AI, poisoning of data sets and prompt hacking and getting around the controls that are being built into generative AI. And we'll continue to see new and novel attacks.
Great points, Justin. One of the other aspects we should look at is next generation software. And in terms of how far firms are advanced in transforming their software development life cycles. So, Soumya, can you talk a bit about next generation software and also what are the implications for cybersecurity there?
Absolutely, Martin. And if you think about it, I've been serving financial services, you know, for over the years, and it's interesting how financial services companies these days, you know, say themselves as technology company first, and then banking or other financial services second, right? So it's almost technology is leading the way for financial services. And next generation software is a critical lever that allows firms to enable that goal that they have to be technology first, because it kind of simplifies those previously complicated custom, you know, code development tasks into more low code, more leveraging co-pilots and other AI-enabled development and testing across the stage of the development lifecycle and technology. Even our research, in this particular research, we found 3/4 of the firm's IIF members we researched in this year reported next-gen software as applicable to their firms. But more importantly, when we asked them about the maturity, over half of our respondents reported they have adoption maturity already either within the pilot or post-pilot or expansion stage, which means these financial services are definitely recognizing the benefits and use cases of next generation of software development lifecycle. But there is an important implication from a cybersecurity and technology risk perspective here to consider as well. Because one of the other questions when we asked the financial services firm is about what are the cybersecurity risks that you are really worried about in terms of different areas you need to improve on. The third-party security risk and the supply chain security management was the top risk identified by IIF like research members. This other one in the top three was privileged access management. Now, if you think about it, these two categories, supply chain security risk, privileged access management, has profound implications to how you think about next-gen software supply chain. It's less than 2 years since the Log4j incident happened, which forced companies to think about what kind of softwares and open source packages are being used in software lifecycle, and what kind of security controls are we implementing within that software development lifecycle here. In addition, if you think about privileged access management, that kind of creates the control on who deploys code, who deploys, packages within your environment, and whether you have the right ring fence and controls around it. So to summarize it, I would say this is one of the most very critical, important levers for financial services is the next-gen software development. But I think as they are expanding on the adoption of it, the data also shows that there are considerable risk in the security controls that should be mindful of, and quickly address them to make sure they can take the full advantage and be more resilient on it.
Great points. One related technology is trust architecture and digital identity, which can both help firms and their clients be more secure against cyber attacks and phishing and spoofing. So, Lauren, how do you see firms using these technologies, trust architecture and digital identity? And are there any use cases that you've seen that are worth highlighting here?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, similar to how Justin mentioned, cloud can help secure Gen AI, with proper implementation, trust architecture and digital identity can absolutely help firms with their security against cyber attacks, phishing, spoofing, like you said. But it can also, as we'll continue to say, open them up to more risks if improperly implemented. In terms of use cases, though, we've seen firms really driven by a desire for kind of an omni-channel customer experience in terms of trust architecture and digital identity, especially within the financial services space. With proper implementation, they can see faster innovation, stronger asset protection, and an overall better and connected customer experience. And, as we mentioned earlier, over 70% of firms noted that trust architecture was applicable. And over half of them, or almost half of them, actually said that they were putting themselves in the post-pilot or maintenance stage of digital identity. So they're not only seeing the value, they've implemented it, and they're continuing to maintain it. It's going to, of course, continue to evolve, but it also brings into question, did they securely implement it? Did they do the upfront? Similar to cloud, what Justin said, almost half of cloud implementations said they're in that maintenance phase. But the question lies from us working with clients in cybersecurity, did they put the proper security implementations in place, or are they just driven by those benefits and weren't really managing the risks that come with it? So, there's definitely benefits, there's definitely risks. And in terms of that, what's driving that, it's really that omni-channel customer experience within digital banking, the 360-degree view of customers, digital wallet, all super exciting things as long as they're taking into consideration and managing those risks.
It was interesting that some technologies were mentioned as important in the survey, but for various reasons, the adoption of them has been slow so far. So I was going to ask you, Justin, if you look at some of these topics like quantum technologies and mobility of the future and immersive reality technologies, our survey respondents said that the adoption has been slow. So why do you think that is? Is it partly a resource constraint in terms of spend and bandwidth, or is it that the technologies just aren't mature enough yet?
I think the answer is multi-threaded. I think, one, yes, resource constraints, and within cybersecurity, we're always strapped for resources. There's notoriously, we've been underspending in cybersecurity for many, many years. There's the ongoing joke that you can never spend enough in cybersecurity to be safe and sleep at night. You know, however, the technologies that are on the horizon that are slow to adopt is just a matter of time. You know, if we look at some of the four technologies that we saw on the slower end of the adoption curve, quantum, future mobility, immersive reality, as slower to adopt, they weren't necessarily as applicable to their firms versus cloud computing, generative AI. However, I think that one of the other answers here is it's a matter of time. In the time period that we're recording this podcast, Apple released a Vision Pro. So by the time this podcast is released, we could be proven wrong, but with all sorts of new consumer use cases, very relevant to financial services firms and payments and digital wallets that we could see around securing that. And so I think it's a matter of time before we see the uptake. Now, if we look at quantum, I think one of the issues there is both the combination of the immaturity of the technology, the lack of availability of enterprise-grade technology, lack of players in the space, and the lack of a regulatory mandate. Where regulations converge, spending converge. We've seen a huge uptick in regulatory actions, increases in MRAs, MRIAs around financial services firms. And that makes sense. Where we see that, we see spending increase. But where we see that is not necessarily in future technologies, but in past, in legacy technologies to fix the issues of the past. So Martin, I think we'll see, the things that we see that are slow to adopt are a function of just the competing priorities to attend to the things that are burning platforms and burning risks now, to the things that companies are planning for tomorrow.
So managing all these technologies, whether they're being adopted or whether they're still coming or whether they're already active out there, it does require a robust, comprehensive cyber risk management strategy for these firms. But it seems like the risks, Lamont, are greater than ever. There's just so many risks. And so how are the organizations prioritizing and managing these technology risks regarding cybersecurity? And are there areas that you see where firms can get quick wins?
Martin, one of my military mentors always told me to focus on the basics, and that stuck with me, and I think it applies here. Often we make mistakes focused on next generation defensive measures before we get good at the basics. As risks will undoubtedly continue to increase, it's more critical than ever for firms to properly manage their cyber risks through robust foundational cyber capabilities. We surveyed firms to understand where their strengths and weaknesses lie, and we saw that key weaknesses were found throughout their foundational cyber capabilities. Without a strong foundation of security protecting their current environment, firms will only see their risks amplified as new technologies expose some of those existing key areas of weaknesses. Firms realize this too, with 31% of firms reporting that they are not confident that their foundational capabilities address their cyber risk. Equally, if not more concerning, was the weakness in risk-based metrics and reporting. If a firm cannot confidently measure their risk, they're flying blind, not knowing how much risk emerging technology will actually pose to them in the future. Despite this, we saw that 41% of the firms noted that metrics and reporting was a key risk for them. The big lesson that we already knew and firms confirmed in our study is firms need to ensure they have strong foundational security before they introduce new technologies, and also really, really focus on their risk-based metrics and reporting to understand the risk and how that's changing with the introduction of new tech.
So a great emphasis there on back to basics and foundations and understanding other risks. In our report, we also included a call for action at the end, which also touches on some of these themes here. And in our call for action, we included questions that organizations and firms should ask themselves about their own security posture. So Soumya, when we drafted these questions, which ones do you think are really the most important for firms in regards to emerging technologies that they are considering and pursuing?
Yes, Martin. I think the number one question they should be asking is, do they have the right priorities when they are thinking of investing in securing their, next gen or emerging technologies or their overall capabilities in general from a cybersecurity standpoint? And what I mean by that, when we asked a question around what are the primary factors that are driving your spend in the cybersecurity capabilities, the 70% of them said, which is like the topmost answer, was compliance regulations. And then the next one was then getting into more into like the other areas. But the interesting insight from there was firms, financial services are really at this point responding and reacting to regulations and compliance versus being more proactive in their risk posture. Taking a step back, I think financial services should question what are the risk priorities for them in terms of their business risk, and then consider in those business priorities and the risk associated, what are the right set of capabilities that they need to invest in versus the tendency of, you know, going for the new shiny tool in cybersecurity and buying a number of tools, et cetera. The second priority question they should be asking is around, do they have the right metrics and reporting to measure what their risk posture is in terms of the technology risk and how they're progressing against it? A transparent, reliable risk-backed metrics can really help them make the right decisions when it comes to investing in the right capabilities. And to be honest, first of all, understand where they are versus, you know, where their risk posture and risk appetite is. And then third question they should be asking is tied to the priorities and the right metrics is, are they investing in the right things? Is the cybersecurity is a driving factor in selecting new technologies or an afterthought? You know, every financial firm I've spoken in the last few months, you know, always a question comes around Gen AI. As they're thinking about Gen AI, are they thinking about the right security controls and risk controls at the beginning in the design phase, or is it more of an afterthought? Is something they should consider? So maybe I'll lastly tie to that, I would say there's also a question of, are we allocating the right budget to our cybersecurity and technology risk capabilities in general? One of the interesting insights from our research this time came, 70% of their survey respondents indicated that they are not spending enough on their cybersecurity program. Compared to the research we did with IIF 2 years ago, which was there was an increase from 58% to 70% just a few years ago. So I think financial services and firms in general should be considering where they are allocating resources and are they allocating the right resources or not. Coupling with the lack of confidence we have seen, it is critical that you assess your current state and then use it to inform to the right decisions in the new technologies.
Thank you. Great questions. And it's been a great conversation. I'm going to ask Lauren one more final question, though, Lauren. Are there any suggestions that you have for how our listeners personally can increase their own cyber resilience, both at work, but also in their private lives in these quickly changing times on the technology front?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a great question, right? As cyber resilience should and can be achieved both personally as well as organizations. So it's not just an overarching organizational decision, but it's something that everyone can do both in their personal and professional lives. I think we said at the very beginning of this podcast that the most successful cyber attacks are often through human error and kind of human implementation and mistakes that are being made. So the best way for organizations and then personnel and their self is really kind of through that personal accountability for cyber. So for us, you know, we would advise, you know, for everyone, of course, it's going to sound a bit silly, but it's super important is to prioritize proactive measures like maintaining strong password hygiene, enabling two-factor authentication. You know, these are foundational aspects that Lamont mentioned or that are so important and are often kind of overlooked in that excitement and that speed to get to those new technologies and jumping into things. But without those foundational capabilities, you know, you're just exposing yourself to more vulnerabilities and more risk. You know, you have that. You also have everyone should continue to stay vigilant against phishing attempts with AI and Gen AI. They're more complicated and more scrutinized than ever. So making sure that they're staying vigilant against those attempts, scrutinizing emails, messaging, suspicious links, things like that are so important to continue to stay against, you know, regularly updating software, operating systems, patching. All of these things are so critical and continue to be critical, especially as the landscape evolves. And, you know, more professionally at work too, you know, this is something I always say, so Samia may laugh because we tell clients all the time, but just kind of taking that risk-backed mindset to everything is just so critical. You know, while we know speed and excitement over new technologies is often driving adoption, and that's a great thing because these are super exciting times, the risks definitely can't be discounted. So risk should be at that forefront of those decisions. Cybersecurity should be at that table from the very beginning and not an afterthought because it's so much easier, you know, from the beginning to really embed those things than to go in later and find out those pockets. And that's really a responsibility that everyone can take, not just at the higher level, not just at the organizational level, but everyone can kind of feel personally accountable for taking that risk back mindset, both their daily personal as well as professional lives.
Thank you so much, Lauren and Justin, Lamont and Soumya, for your insightful analysis, comments on all things cybersecurity and emerging technologies, and for joining me on this IF Global Regulatory Update podcast. My colleague, Melanie Eidler, and I are also grateful for all your leadership and for your excellent collaboration on this project, as well as the one that we did 2 years ago. To all of our listeners, our survey report can be found on the McKinsey website and on the IF website. We thank everyone for listening to this podcast, and please reach out to all of us at McKinsey and the IF if you have any questions or comments. And please consider subscribing to the IF Global Regulatory Update on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.